My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Live from Scores on Canal Street, right down the street from TD Garden, it's Christian Arcand, it's Andy Hart, it's WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here today. Show today brought to you by Jameson, the official partner of the Boston Bruins, the Jameson Black Barrel, Jameson Orange Specialty Cocktails. Come on down here and ask for one right up at the bar. We're down on the first floor, and you can come say hi to us as well as we get you ready for the first home game of the season here for your Boston Bruins, the Montreal Canadiens. They're old rivals. Their new rivals now are Florida, and I don't even know if rivals is a great word for that, but what are you west siding for?
No, I was doing W. You're going to eat the dub tonight.
Oh.
Like Jameis Winston.
Oh, yeah. Right? That went over great when Jameis did that.
You're going to eat the dub.
That video of him doing that, eating the dub, if you look at his teammates, they're all staring at him. They all look so disappointed. They're like, this is our quarterback? Like, what is he doing?
Well, you know, you can't win them all.
No, you can't. You can't creative. Eat all the dubs either anyway. But, this is hopefully going to be the first dub of the year. If they lose to Montreal, I may officially start panicking, and I know it's early
the
for that.
The panic button on night two?
But it's never too early to panic. Not in Boston Sports Talk Radio, I don't think. And also, this Bruins team I have high hopes for. I have high hopes and high expectations for this team this year. I loved what they did in the offseason, and I think that they're cup contenders. That's how I look at them. That's what I think their ceiling is.
What's their floor?
I think is missing the playoffs.
You think
their floor could be missing the playoffs, and I'm not the only one who thinks that. I was reading around all the experts at CBS and Yahoo and NHL.com, and there's, percentage of them, maybe like a quarter of them, that have the Bruins missing the playoffs this year.
Yeah, that would stun me, barring a significant injury or something, you know, changing the roster somehow. It would stun me if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now, it would also honestly stun me.
They're in a good division. I mean, listen, the division's tough, and they have teams ahead of them, or conceivably, that they're going to have to contend with in Florida, in Tampa, in Toronto. Even the Detroit and Buffalo are considered teams on the rebound this year. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see what that looks like. The only team I'm not worried about is the team you're playing tonight. I'm not worried about Montreal, not worried about Ottawa either. Well, I think those are two teams you can feel okay about. But the rest of them, I look at them and I think, yeah, this is a more competitive division this
especially
year.
Especially with the spot tonight, with Montreal getting a big win last night,
yeah.
Getting off to a hot start, a back-to-back. I'm going to guess they kind of had their hats handed to them by Jim Montgomery, or at least I hope so. Even some of his comments with the lineup changes, he was like, these are not directly related to performances in the opener because everybody was terrible in the opener, kind of like that insinuation, I can't bench everybody kind of thing.
But if I could.
But if I could, maybe I'd consider it after what went down in the on opening night. But this is a good spot for them. I'm not sure they're a Stanley Cup contender. Unless Swayman gets really hot, your guy, in the postseason, it's hard for me to envision. But, you know, you hear the comments out of Florida that, like, oh, they play us tougher than anybody. And, you know, that's the Stanley Cup champions, technically. That's not technically, literally. That's the Stanley Cup champions. That's the measuring stick right now in the NHL. So if you can find a way to get over that hump against them, maybe you are that kind of team. But I think tonight is a good spot for them. I got 4-1.
4-1 Bruins?
Yep, 4-1 Bruins.
All right. I dig that. It's a good score.
Maybe an empty netter late. Maybe it was 3-1, an empty netter makes 4-1.
A little insurance goal at the end there.
Yeah.
Ruin some guy's bet. Yeah, that's a good way of doing it. Jim Montgomery, who we just heard from there, lame duck right now. Doesn't have not signed beyond this season. I think going into a season with a guy in a situation like that's always a little bit risky.
Yep.
And I think that he's sort of not really – I don't know what he is. You know, he's got some things that I like about him and his personality, and I think that the teammates, guys on the team respect him, and that's all well and good. But I'm not quite sure what to make of him. The playoffs, I feel like he hasn't exactly filled me with a ton of confidence. I didn't like how he went back to the goalie rotation. I didn't like some of his answers last year when he was trying to explain why the offense was going away late in that Toronto series and throughout the Florida series. I like him and I want to like him and I want him to do well and have it be an easy decision for them to extend him and to keep him around here. But part of me also gets why they're hesitant, you know. Part of me also sees maybe what they're seeing, why they haven't already come out with a big extension for the guy yet. And I think this is a big proving season for him, and not just for him, but for someone like Don Sweeney, and maybe even Cam Neely. And those guys are probably bulletproof at this point. I don't know if anything's ever going to affect those two guys. But it does trickle down to someone like Jim Montgomery. And this season could be a referendum, even though it shouldn't be on him and everybody else in that whole front office.
Well, at some point, there has to be a head, right? Like some head has to roll, to use the term.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think Neely is a made man. Sweeney probably too. I think those two probably
Sweeney
made men.
I think Sweeney is too, yeah.
So therefore, it's the coach that's going to be the fall guy at whatever point. There is some impatience with what they are, and he's a regular season coach. You have to like his regular seasons. Like, you can't.
No question.
Great first one, and then they overachieved in the regular season last year.
Regular season record with the Bruins is 1-12, 33-20.
That's pretty good.
See, that's ridiculous. But then there's the underachievements right. of the postseason, and that's all that anyone really cares about.
And that's all anyone remembers.
Yes. No one's ever going to remember those. You actually set yourself up for failure with the
9-11 in the postseason.
And that is all people are going to remember. So you have, right there, you have a goalie who just got his big deal, who has a sub-500 postseason record, and you have a coach who's looking for his extension, who has a sub-500 record in the postseason. And then the difference being, the goalie has his contract.
Right.
The coach is looking for his, and I'm guessing you have to, I can't imagine you play it out, right? I'm guessing you can't go into the playoffs with him as a lame duck coach.
Like, and I just say, yeah, just win a series or two, and then we'll right. start talking. I mean, they got to be talking right now, I would think.
Well, yeah, Scott
they've been
said
talking
they've
this
been
whole
talking.
Time. Yeah.
And Scott was, Scott McLaughlin, WEEI.com, our Bruins beat guy, was more optimistic that, yeah, they'll talk for a little bit, they'll start the season, make sure, you know, the wheels don't fall off or something, and then give them the extension.
I mean, what if the wheels do fall off? Like, if they get off to a bad start here, they're already 0-1. If they get off to a bad, say they start the year like 1-6 or something. I'm not. I don't think they will, but just, you know, hypothetically here, if that were to happen, does he fire? I mean, do they can him? Like, is that on the table? It's kind of got to be, right?
If you're using this as some sort of a trial period and you fail the trial, don't there have to be ramifications?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, otherwise it's not a trial period, and then just give him the contract.
Right.
So if there's no ramifications,
he'd already have the contract if they weren't putting him up to some kind of test here. And I think that's, you know, you look at the season and you look at what they did last year and how they won a round in the playoffs and, you know, locking down Swayman and spending all this money. They spent $92 million, that whatever it was, in the offseason, a franchise record. They're committed to this season. This season's important to them. This season is one that they all, I think, from top to bottom, have high hopes and high expectations for. You got to meet them now. And, you know, there's, I think you get enough of a grace period, sure. Maybe 1-7 is a little premature, but, or 1-6 or whatever like that. But that's sort of what we're talking about. It's not just all, you know, vibes in the locker room anymore. I don't think that's going to be enough to save everybody this time around. I think that you need to show it. It needs to reflect in the standings, and hopefully, and you know, you got to decide if you want to commit or not before the playoffs start. But that has to be part of it too.
And you can't accuse them of not spending money. I mean, right now, what do they have? $200,000 in cap space, or whatever the ridiculously low number is. And we were just talking about the Red Sox. You know, Red Sox trade Mookie Betts. Red Sox move on for Bogart. Like, they haven't really done that, right? You just gave your goalie a ton of money. You gave Pastrnak a ton of money. You gave McAvoy a ton of money. Like, you've kept the guys you wanted to keep, or at least some part of your core. And if that doesn't lead to something, changes come. Like, changes are part of sports. There's only, you know, it's why we talk about windows. The window is open, and how big's the window? And the window right now feels kind of big, right? I mean, other than, like, Marchand, who's getting older.
What is the way? It's like the Pastrnak window, the Marchand window,
the Swayman window.
That's an 8-year window.
McAvoy window.
Yeah. But, like, when I think of windows, I think of the older play. Like, Marchand, that's the
window. No, but that's what I mean. You don't really have many olds. Bergeron is gone. Krejci is gone. Marchand has got a couple years left. Char is long gone.
Like,
that window, whatever that window was, we've transitioned into a new window, and they've done that by signing core marquee star players.
Yeah.
Right? So you're in and then you bring in a guy like Lindholm. That's a lot of money you invested in him.
Yeah.
And on a long-term deal, which we can talk about this down the road, don't you feel like that's going to be regrettable down the road? Like, don't you think that contract's going to look bad at some point?
Lindholm?
Like
No, I mean, for a top-line centerman, I don't think so.
Why are you down on it? Because how old is he?
Good question. 27?
I wanted to say 29. Maybe he's not as old as I thought he was.
Elias Lindholm is 29. No, you're right. He's 29.
And he signed a 8-year deal? Or seven?
Seven-year deal.
So at 36... he's going to be making seven and change. I don't know. I feel like that's a contract that's going to be a little bit beyond his production. But whatever. That doesn't matter. That's an argument to have down the road. We can't criticize the Red Sox for not spending and then the Bruins for spending. So I'm on the pro side. If you've invested in this team, they've invested in this team at trade deadlines more aggressively than the Red Sox ever have in
the
recent
years.
The best
work that Sweeney ever does is at the trade deadline,
right.
I think. It's better. All his off seasons may be safe for this one.
He may have to again.
Yeah.
He may have to get creative this year, and I don't know with cap space and how that'll all work out, because I think they are going to be looking to add some scoring punch at the trade deadline. But, no, this is a key year for them. Coming off the offseason, aggressive in free agency, kept your goalie, invested in your goalie. You have your coach, whatever his status is, lame duck, you know, working for dinner kind of situation. This is, and you're right, I don't know what if they fail to live up to expectations. I feel like the only person that's in the crosshairs is Montgomery.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the only change you could possibly make, and I don't know if that's even fair given his regular season record and what he's done. But I don't think you can wait till the postseason either to kind of figure out on the fly. So, you know, best thing for everybody is obviously they go out and, you know, Swayman goes like 5-2 in his first seven starts. And it's like, okay, everything's going to work. Here's your extension, Montgomery. Here's, you know, now we can look toward the trade deadline and how this roster is going to look in the postseason. Because I do think you're a little more optimistic on that. They're a good hockey team. They're going to compete for multiple playoff series is where they should be.
That's where they should be, I agree. And I think that, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, the historically anyway, there's always been some team that's kind of been in their way, whether it was Tampa Bay for a couple of years, whether it was Washington with Braden Holtby, those years they couldn't beat him, whether it was Carolina. And those guys, they smacked you around. The Islanders beat you, which I think I still don't, am annoyed by that. The Panthers the last 2 years, like, no matter what, even in the years when you seem like the dominant team, when you're the President's Trophy winner, when you're so far ahead of everybody in the regular season, something always just seems to cut. There's always some roadblock. It's never, they're never the team that you have to go through. You know what I mean? Like, it's always something else. And I was sort of hoping that eventually, with this turnover on the roster and, you know, these exciting young players and guys that you still have in Pastrnak and McAvoy and, you know, your big-name guys, that was going to shift. And I'm just not sure it has. I think it's shifted completely to Florida right now. I think Tampa's still very much a team to be reckoned with. You still got Toronto. You can always beat Toronto. That's one of those teams makes the playoffs. You'll always beat them, and you never have to worry about it. But in general, I just sort of feel like, you know, the more things change and the more they do with the roster and everything, it just seems like very familiar problems over the last 10 years or so that still exist now.
Well, part of that was 2 years ago, you were supposed to be the team that everybody had to go through,
right.
And Florida said, you're not the team that everybody has to go through you, because we're going to go right through you in the first round. So, no, Montgomery's an interesting guy. I don't know what I think of him personality-wise, because he kind of, he seems very likable. Mm-hmm. And then he was kind of annoying. Remember last year, the weird answers about the goalie?
Yes.
Was it like, what did he compare to, Wordle? Or was that 2 years ago when he would do the Wordle thing? And like,
yeah.
The goalie is like my morning Wordle. It has five letters or something.
You're like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, I didn't care for that
very
whole
good.
Game.
Very good, Monty.
And even the way he handled the goalie Bob situation, and I know they backed off that a little bit last year and didn't kind of put him So on a pedestal.
He was ready to throw him right up. Well, not throw him under the bus, but basically just say, hey, don't look at me.
I don't like that.
How am I supposed to know?
Like, that's like, I don't want Mayo telling me all the offense is just this guy. If it doesn't, you know, go talk to him. Well, no, he's not the head coach. You're the head coach.
Exactly. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Joe in Melrose. He has a thought on the Bees. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. So I'm definitely was a goalie rotation guy. I think the Bruins are going to struggle to make the playoffs this year. Not because of Swayman. I think Swayman will get his points and get his wins in the regular season. I think they're going to really struggle to get points out of that backup goalie. You're going to be lucky if you get the tie point and you lose after a tie.
Yeah, you might be right about that. I saw Brian shaking. Is that, what are you, Corpusalo truth?
Well, not even Corpusalo, just the Bruins not making the playoffs. They were 5 points off from the President's Trophy last year.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's
they were 18 points clear of the final wild card spot. So I just don't understand how 1 year they're now going to lose 9 more games than they did last year. Yes, I know the goalie situation is probably worse overall.
If the goalie gives up 6 goals every game, we might be in trouble.
But that's your backup goal. He's going to play what?
15, 20 games? Well, no, 55.
If you're paying your goalie $8.25 million.
To play 55 games. That's the number they've circled.
But you know what? He should be playing more than 55 games. And I think even with Corpusalo, he's not going to be allowing 6 goals every night. He played the Stanley Cup defending champion Panthers. They're going to be mostly playing him against
last
crap.
Last year he had an .890 save percentage. So, I mean, this is not someone that I feel good about.
But he's going to be playing mostly crap teams throughout most of the year, right? In theory, what they should be
doing. Last year he was a crap goalie.
Right.
Right, but I think he has a better team in front of him this year.
Yeah, unstoppable crap and immovable crap. crap. And what something's got to give there, I guess. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We got room on the phone lines for you if you want to chime in on the Bruins, who have their home opener tonight right up the street here at TD Garden. When we come back, Drake May spoke to the media yesterday. Is the May train still pumping, I wonder?
Yeah, it is.
Are people still excited? And also, we'll talk with Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. That's all coming up right after Stiz. Get you caught up on what's trending.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending right now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Patriots back on the practice field today as they get ready for their Week 6 tilt against the Houston Texans on Sunday. Kickoff from Gillette Stadium at 1 p.m. Jerod Mayo confirmed yesterday that Drake May will be the starting quarterback moving forward for the Patriots. And offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt, he's feeling good about it.
You know, it's like any other week, you're trying to put the best plan together to win the game. Obviously, you know, with the quarterback change, you change a little bit in your approach. I would say that's definitely true. But, you know, excited to get a chance to go out and play on Sunday and try to get us a win at home.
Week 6 in the NFL kicks off tonight with the 49ers in Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Kickoff at 8:15 from Lumen Field. You can hear the call of that game right here on WEEI-FM. Our Westwood One coverage begins at 7:30. The home opener for your Boston Bruins goes down tonight as the Bees will host the Canadiens. Puck drops at 7 p.m. from Causeway Street. Jeremy Swayman will get the start in net for your Bruins. And if you're near the TD Garden from now until 6 p.m., stop by Scores and hang out with Arcan and Hart, our WEEI afternoon show. They're broadcasting live to celebrate the home opener. And in the MLB, the Mets headed to the NLCS for the first time in 9 years after they beat the Phillies 4-1 last night. They will face the winners of the Padres and Dodgers. That series currently tied at 2 games apiece. And the Guardians will take on the Tigers tonight at 6, and the Yankees facing the Royals tonight, first pitch at 8. Trending brought to you by Time Out Market Boston. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoon show coming up.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Does have a little Boomhauer to him, doesn't he?
Who?
Boomhauer, King of the Hill.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something there, man.
Well, he's a Southerner.
Oh, definitely, you know, but it's when I hear that, that's all I can think of.
Don't you like him?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, just hearing him talk and the way he approaches things.
100%.
There's a likability.
He's a very likable guy. Absolutely.
Way more than Mac Jones, definitely. Who was also a Southerner.
Yes, true. Florida Panhandle, though, not quite
yeah,
the same.
Different
right?
Yeah, type of
different
South. But
a little different South, but yes.
The new first-round quarterback is much more likable than the old first-round quarterback.
And that is a nice thing for, you know, us and for the media and people trying to sell jerseys and things of that. Now, would you catch a whiff of that, by the way?
I did.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow. That's nice. Huh? Hey, how about that?
That'll anyway, wake up.
That was, yeah, hello. Anyways.
This guy.
He's doing is it?
Shots.
Yeah, right.
He's
got Brian over here. Brian and Tyler.
You're not going to pass any tests at the end of this show.
No, probably not. It's legal now. 617-779-7937, the phone number. Is the May train still chugging over at the Hart residence?
Absolutely.
The initial news, and when we broke it, obviously, everybody was excited. Keith and Jones were beside themselves with excitement, popping off confetti guns. And I'm still excited about it, too. I just sort of wonder if, like, after the initial shock of it wears off, right? Like, yeah, all right, he's playing. This is great. He's playing. Reality sets in. And the reality is you're still the Patriots. Like, you're still –
nope.
This is still the team. That hasn't happened yet?
No. That could happen second quarter on Sunday or something, depending on what I see. But, no, absolutely not. And if you're prone to be positive about Drake May, then you buy the propaganda,
right.
I'm assuming. So you hear Alex Van Pelt said, we did 6 reps of blitz, and he nailed all 6 blitz with blah, 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 whatever. So you eat that up, right? Because you want to eat that up because you want Drake May to be good. You wanted this move. You wanted this excitement. So that, no, there's no changes. The Stevenson thing is less than ideal.
I don't love that. Yeah,
no.
That's not great.
Because I do want to continue to be
a run-balanced offense. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking to throw Drake May out there and like, hey, you're Bledsoe. Remember that 70 attempt yeah, game? Right. This is what you're going to do, kid. No, no, no. I want it to be like a 25 passes, 25 runs kind of game. And if Stevenson's not out there, that's not ideal. But I'm not getting caught up in that. Drake May is starting. We got what we wanted, so be happy until there's reason to not be happy.
We are live at Scores on Canal Street. Show today is brought to you by Jameson, official partner of the Boston Bruins, with Jameson Black Barrel, Jameson Orange Specialty Cocktails. You can order one right up at the bar here. We're down on the first floor. Come on over and say hi if you're on your way to the game. And we got some Bruins calls on the line. Let's go to them. We'll start with Barry, who's on his way to the Garden, who has a thought on the goalie situation. Hi, Barry.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Barry, what's up?
What's up? Not much. Yeah, having two goalies, and I know this, I've been playing hockey since I was four, but having two goalies is key. The goalie, it's kind of like, just to make a correlation, it's kind of like only having four pitchers on the Red Sox, and we all know the way they are now. It's rare that the pitchers go the whole game. Baseball is kind of the same. The goalie's the most important position, meaning last year when they were resting him, when they had back-to-backs, let's just say, you know, Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday, mm-hmm. they had back-to-backs, they would go swim and then, you know, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And right. on my son's a sophomore in high school, his team did that last year. And it was phenomenal. The year before that, they had one goalie, one single goalie. They didn't even have a backup. And at the end of the season, the kid was just his father's like.
All right, Barry, thanks for the call. I don't care about your high school team.
Oh, that's hurtful.
I think that in general, I mean, sorry. I mean, we're talking about the Bruins.
I want
here.
To know what happened at the
I
end of the season.
I didn't want to know about that. I didn't care. But I think that in general, there is something to be said for this. The goalie rotation. Oh, whatever. We're going to sit here and listen to this. The goalie rotation last year was very successful. It was a successful thing. I just don't understand people who complain about it not being used in the playoffs. Did you not watch Linus Ullmark in the playoffs the last couple of years? What do you want him out there for? The rotation works when you have two guys who perform well, and he is not a good playoff goalie. He never has been.
Right.
And putting Swayman out there made way too much sense. And I just think that people who are still annoyed by that and still think, you needed to have Ullmark and you needed to stick with the goalie rotation, if Ullmark had given you any indication that he was a playoff performer, then I'd say fine. But he didn't. The reason why Swayman in that position after a Vezina season is because Ullmark blew it in the playoffs, and he did just like he did the year before. And that's the whole point. Like, that's why the rotation wasn't tenable, why you couldn't just count on that going through past the regular season and into the playoffs. You need to have one guy. If he needs a night off at some point in the process, fine, you give it to him. But a rotation there with a guy who you know is not a good playoff goalie, I'm not into that.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that you have one goalie in the playoffs and you need to have a good goalie in the playoffs, and you have that now. Now, I think, I don't know if the caller was alluding to that they no longer have a second goalie in the regular season. They do.
Mm-hmm.
They have a second goalie in the regular season.
They
How
do.
Good that guy is, I have no idea. I know they traded for him. They acquired him. They wanted him, theoretically.
Yeah.
Right?
They wanted to get rid of Ullmark. They took back what they could get.
And they got him, and they're paying him $3 million, and goalie Bob is supposed to have his magic dust. Everybody tells me that every goalie comes here gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Every goal. So you have a guy that should get better, then you have a second goalie. And it's the ideal. If you have a second veteran goalie who is good, not great,
yep.
good. No, I don't need a Vezina. I don't need an all-star. Just a good one. And I have a franchise goalie, then there's no confusion. Because I don't like the confusion and this idea that you're not sure who the goalie is in the postseason. To me, I know teams have done it. Teams have made goalie switches. Like, Bruins have lost to teams that have made goalie switches. It can work, I guess.
Yep.
I like going into the postseason saying, that guy's my goalie. And when we lose, it'll be with him.
Yep.
When we win, it'll be with him.
And this is who we have right. the most confidence in, and this is our guy. I mean, yeah, I agree with that 100%. That's usually when you get that guy and he does perform that way, you ride him as far as you can. And I think the Bruins did that last year, by the
yep.
way. Swayman was good. Swayman was good in both rounds, and they rode him as far as they could. I don't think putting Ullmark in there would have made things any different or any better for you at all.
No.
The goaltending was not the problem. Bob is in the car. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, my issue is they let that Bennett punch their captain in the face, and they did nothing about it. Bennett ran over our goal the other night. They did nothing about it. It's like, you know what Tyson said, everybody gets a planter, you get punched in the face. They're getting punched in the face, and they're not doing nothing. So they're going against a big team. Well, they didn't play too big. I mean, the first guy should have been after Bennett. And when he came out of the box, another guy should have went after him. I'm not talking big, bad Bruins. I'm talking a guy just punch you, tapped it in the face, and you did nothing about it. The guy ran over your goalie, and you're going after Tkachuk.
Yeah, Bob, listen, you're singing my song. I'll tell you that. I was screaming about that for about 24 straight hours, and I think you're absolutely right. I understand not wanting to go out and get frontier justice on Bennett in the playoffs, right? It's the playoffs. Yep. You can't be giving the penalties away, and he did get away with one. They didn't whistle him for that, even though they should have. I mean, he came in with his fist cocked and got him right in the face, and he was knocked out of two games. And then Marchand, in fairness, came out and was like, hey, it's part of the game. You know, I don't think anything was wrong with that. It's just the way it is. And that's probably smart for him to say, but, you know, in general, I think that you're not talking about that two nights ago. Two nights ago was the first game of the season, and he's still out there. They're running your goalie.
Yep.
It's one thing to go and hit another play. You're kamikaze dive bombing the goalie like that, and nothing. Mason Laura just leaned on him. That's it. No one really had to pay for it. There was some roughing penalties afterwards, and I think the Bruins did end up with a power play, but they had already scored the goal. Like, Rodriguez scored the goal. It was after the goal got scored, and I didn't really care about a power play right there. I cared about justice, and there was no justice, Andy. Justice at all.
Well, there was no justice. There was no almost really intent for justice. It's like they half-assed tried to. It's like they wanted the idea. Well, what do you want me to do? We tried, and there's nothing we can do. And I continue to go back to Florida. Just they're like the puppeteer, and the Bruins are the puppet. Mm-hmm. They just pull the strings, and Tkachuk is at the center of it all at all times, it seems like. And it's like you never know when they're going to outskill you, when they're going to skate by you and score, when they're going to rough you up, and it's you're always playing catch up, and it's that, and that's a Montgomery thing, right? Like that's your coach, that's setting a tone, and your leaders. Mm-hmm. I do think your leaders play a role in that, Marchand and others. But that was more disappointing than Corposalo or losing. That sort of the way the game was played was totally on their terms, on their night.
Yeah,
that's the other thing, on their night. Like, you couldn't even play spoiler and try to ruin their night, and you should have had all the energy, all the motivation, all the inspiration in the world there, and it was like sad trombone, just a flat performance.
Yeah, and don't give me, well, they woke up at the end. No, they didn't. That was garbage time, and that doesn't matter.
Drake May woke up at the end against the Jets. No,
right.
It's garbage time. Yeah. You put him in.
Did not matter. And I think Florida took their foot off the gas, as they probably should. They were up 5-1. 617-779-7937. Doug's in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, hi, guys. So hey, it bothered me last year, and already this year, as is I'd like to see McAvoy be more active in the offensive zone. You watch him watch the team struggle to get through the neutral zone, and then you'll see McAvoy come out from behind the goal with the puck and skate right by everybody real smoothly. And then when he gets to the blue line, he just dumps it off and nothing happens. I'd love to see him be more aggressive and just go right in and shoot, you know. I don't know what you guys think about it, but
Doug, I agree with you. I think that's exactly what McAvoy should be doing, especially when this team is struggling to get their offense going, which has been kind of a problem. Certainly late in the season and in the postseason, the offense disappears, and that's just not something that you can put 100% on the forwards. Like, they're the main catalyst of it, but you got a guy like McAvoy making $8 million who's known as someone who can, as the caller just pointed out, navigate through the neutral zone and come out of his own zone. He couldn't do that the other night. Florida was all over him. There were not a lot of clean breakouts in that game.
No.
And that was disappointing, too. It's like, you know what this team is. You know that they're an aggressive forechecking team. You know that they're good at forcing turnovers in your own end, and you played right into that. You're right. I mean, they played right into everything Florida wanted them to do, and it seemed like it was on both ends of the ice, neutral zone, wherever. Wherever they were, Florida was in control.
Which, doesn't that seem like it's impossible? Like, that whole theory where, like, if you're going to dominate in one end, you should give something up on the other. And we're like, how did they seem to control the entire ice? That's where I go to Montgomery. Brian, you almost broke your neck nodding on the McAvoy thing.
Well,
did you see him? Like, yes. Not, yeah. Oh, the bobblehead night here at Scores.
He's tied for the fifth highest-paid defenseman in terms of AAV. He's tied with Adam Fox. And, you know, McAvoy's a guy, I think, in the last couple of years, especially in the playoffs, is really underachieved.
And I thought last year he was kind of bad.
Yeah, and I think this series before in 2023, he was not that great in the playoffs either. And I think, you know, if he's going to want to be in Norris conversations, he's got to perform offensively. All these guys ahead of him in terms of AAV, Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, you know, Adam Fox, these are guys who get active in the offensive zone, and these are guys who are, you know, consistently in the running for Norris trophies, and, you know, McAvoy hasn't really been that close yet.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're going to pay him this much money? I feel like he's, in Arkin, to your point, like, they're not going to get a lot of offense from their actual forward, so they're going to need help on the back end.
Matt is in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up?
So, I love Brad Marchand. My question to you guys is, do you think we were better off when he was just a maniac, like, you know, licking people, so unpredictable, just, you know, really throwing people off their games, and now he's, you know, I give him all the credit in the world. He's changed about, like, he's well-behaved, he's a captain, but, you know, you got a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, he just throws people completely off their games, and he can play, so... That's just kind of what do you think about that? Thanks.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, Matt, and I think that Brad Marchand, early in his career, was different from Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk was always considered a highly high-skilled player. Marchand was just considered this bottom-line rat who worked his way up to what he is now. And, I mean, listen, he's had a great career. He's 35, 36. He's 36 and is going to turn 37 in May. And, yeah, I mean, does he play with the same edge that he played years ago? I don't think so. I think you're probably onto something there. I think that's probably a good thing for him at this point in his career. But I also think that in terms of what you're expecting from him, you're expecting points. You're expecting production. And last year, he was almost a 30-goal scorer. And I'm expecting something similar to that again this year. I mean, that's, you know, unless there's a massive drop-off, which there could be. There could certainly be that. He's a 36-year-old undersized winger. I mean, those things happen. But that's what I'm expecting from him. If you don't get that, I don't know where it's going to come from. You know, DeBrusque is gone. Heinen's gone. You got Geeky up there on the top six. Like, I just feel like there's a potential here for there to be a real problem offensively in the top six in particular. And I think maybe, I don't know if we're already seeing it. It's one game into the season, but it certainly didn't look great in that first game.
Yeah, I think you need him to be the skilled scorer that he became more than you need him to be the instigator, the rat, the guy that does all those. Now, if he loses a little something and the scoring goes away, and maybe that's the way he stays contributing and functional to go back to his original style of play, maybe. But if that's an issue, then I think they're going to have an issue with scoring goals.
Yeah, and the other thing about Marchand is he's a repeat offender. So, like, you're not going to get a lot of grace with him if he goes out there and bridges somebody. You know, like, if that's – he slew-foots Kachar. I almost said Keith Kachar. Then that's, you know, that's a different thing. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk Patriots with you, and Tommy Kern will be joining the show as well. It's all coming up next. That was Alex Van Pelt speaking to the media earlier today on board with Drake May. And for more on that, we are joined now by NBC Sports Boston's Tom E. Kern, who's brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com, and by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. Mr. Kern, how are we doing?
Christian, Andrew, how are you?
We're doing great. Nice to talk with you here, Tommy, as we are live at Scores down by the Garden, and we're missing you, obviously, but wanted to talk about what we just heard there from Alex Van Pelt. On board, he's saying now, with the Drake May decision. Was he the last holdout? Were there holdouts in this decision-making process?
I don't think there were holdouts. I'm sure that there are individuals who are not, you know, as... They didn't feel it was as dire as Gerard probably did. But again, when I tried to ask Gerard on Wednesday, so how did you approach Alex Van Pelt with this? He made it sound like, you know, incrementally over the period of time, each week they would have conversations about the progress of May and the progress of the offense. And I think that's, you know, I tried to get Mayo to explain, so was it a matter of time and this was a last straw type of thing? And he didn't necessarily say that. But I think that Van Pelt is in an interesting situation. I'll say this, from what I understand and what you heard indicated today, he is very high on Drake May. He's very excited about coaching Drake May. His development has been outstanding since April. But I think that Van Pelt has the same trepidation that everyone does. We had a plan. We've had to go to plan B because we were so horrendous. I hope it's not a disaster. But we'll go ahead and see how it goes.
What do you think the expectation is internally for Drake May in terms of, okay, that's a decent first game on Sunday?
How many plays look like utter disaster, and do they look like utter disaster? Do they look like utter disaster because he peed down his leg, or because of something he didn't observe, that he would be able to, on film, realize, recognize, and not have repeat. Mm-hmm. So I think that that would be a success. If he goes 9 for 19 for 87 yards and three picks, and everything that he does wrong is readily apparent, and it's not, he did this on this one, he did that on that one, he couldn't get the ball away from center, he misidentified blockers, he was asleep at that, that would be a big issue. If there are reads that he can fix and he can say, yep, that was a horrible thing to do, I think we'll be okay. Like, remember, as I'm sure you do, Andy and Christian, Tom Brady's second start was against the Dolphins in Miami, and I think he threw for 86 yards, and they buried the ball.
Hopefully they're not burying the ball on Monday, I would say. When you talk about the locker room reaction, which I think was noticeably different than what you were hearing from coaches and other people who made this announcement, the locker room reaction even leading into this, guys like Hunter Henry, people were really pumping the tires of Drake May. Is that something that was a locker room-wide decision that everyone sort of agreed on? Were there splits in the locker room? I mean, I know Jacoby Brissett has a lot of respect in there, but is this, in general, a popular move in that room?
Yeah, in general, it's a popular move. I think that had they gone out this week, Christian, and played poorly offensively and lost the game to Houston, then you'd be saying, well, we've just done that for the last 4 weeks, and we kind of knew that was going to happen again. We're not getting it done, given all the factors around Jacoby, with Jacoby in the pilot seat. So there would be, I imagine, well, we saw the same movie we expected to see. With Drake, even if it isn't tremendous, I think the players, the coaches, ownership, executives, they all see the same football teams and games that we do. And that's something I've come to learn over the years. They have the exact same emotions and perspectives that we do on the outside as either media members or fans. And they'll want to see it. Maybe Drake does better. We're curious. We're excited about it. So that is something that I thought there might be a little bit greater holdout or reservation of enthusiasm because of all Jacoby had done. But there hasn't been. I haven't noticed that at all, really.
Tom, do you think Alex Van Pelt will make some significant changes to the offense? Will there be things that we see and they're like, oh, yeah, he wouldn't have done that last week with Jacoby? And what might some of those be?
He's going to make him look a lot more like the things that he was comfortable with at North Carolina. So I would imagine we're going to see more shotgun. We might see some more rollout. We're going to see some opportunities, I think, for him to get out and make plays outside the pocket. He throws very well, as you guys saw, whether it be looking at his North Carolina highlights or when you were down at camp. He throws very well on the run. He almost, and I said this last year in the process leading up to the draft before we even got down to the point where they were going to be doing it, I was like, he looks like he seeks chances to find, to throw where he's on the move. He doesn't have to move, and he finds a reason to move and then likes to throw on the run. So, you know, will they find opportunities to move him around and get him opportunities to throw on the run? I think they'll do all that. And Albert Breer, who said, you know, he's been talking to a lot of people around the league, has reported that they've already got things in from North Carolina that they will be starting to implement.
Looks like Ramondre Stevenson's missing practice again today. He wasn't spotted out there at the media portion. He missed yesterday. If he's not ready to go, how much is that going to affect the game plan? Are they going to have May throwing a lot more maybe than they want to?
I think they'll probably elevate Kevin Harris and put him up. He's on the practice squad still. So I don't, not to say they won't miss a beat, but Gibson's played well. See, the thing about Stevenson, now that you're mentioning it, and, you know, that is a good likelihood. But the thing about Stevenson is, okay, how's your blitz pickup? How is the security in the pocket if you have to keep somebody in? Who is adept at getting out into routes and catching the ball? Can Jamichael Hasty be a player? I'm saying that name, and I wish I had been saying it more. He's a third down back. He's a little fella. He can make some yards. Maybe they start to employ him a little bit as well. But between Gibson, Kevin Harris, Hasty, you should be able to divvy up enough reps in an NFL game between the running backs.
There was a comment that Elliot Wolf told Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald before the season started about, like, the worst thing in the world is if you put a guy out there and he's not ready, and then you got to take him out. Have we reached the point that this is Drake May's team for the rest of the year unless something really crazy happens? Like, are they going to make every effort that he finishes the season if healthy?
Yes, they are. And I asked that specific question to Mayo yesterday using that quote. So this is his team. This is Drake May's show come hell or high water. Does that mean if he goes 0 for 18 and he can't get out of his own way, that you don't have to take him off the field? I would imagine that that would be an outlier expectation, but he wouldn't be going on the field if they thought he was even capable of that. That's the aspect of this, I guess, that none of us really know because we're not watching the practices and we all have to take it by word of mouth. Drake May was really close at the end of training camp, and he's only gotten better. So I think that might be when we look Monday and say, what was your impression of the game? It's probably going to be, there was some chaos out there, but May looked a little bit better than I thought he was going to. I think that that might be our biggest takeaway by the time we're done.
Speaking of things that look better than you expected them to, the offensive line statistically and by some, advanced analytics seems to be improving here in the last 2 weeks. Last week in particular, I think it was more noticeable. Is this offensive line good enough to support a rookie quarterback, Tommy?
No, I don't think so, especially against this team. I think it's a tough start, and I'm sure that you guys have talked about that at length. But nothing ever stays the same. In my experience, if you're really bad at something and you're going to keep showing up at work and they're going to pay you and you have people who are overseeing you and everybody depends on you, you just can't keep performing at a below-average level week in and week out. So I'm not surprised that it has stabilized, but I just don't think it's stabilized to the point where Drake May on Sunday is going to get 90s Cowboys protection, which I know you're not saying either, but I just think there's going to be occasions when he's going to find people in his face that he's going to have to say, well, I didn't plan on this guy being right here. What am I going to do now? And that, to me, is the biggest part of this, too. Drake May considers himself a playmaker, considers himself someone who can create. Mayo mentioned his ability to make off-schedule plays. He was the number 3 pick in the draft because of his abilities before the Patriots got him. So will they allow him to be Drake May, or does he feel as if, okay, what am I supposed to do here because I've learned all these things since April? Will they allow him to be Drake May?
Tom, you and I, Bragg, have been around this team for like 60 years combined probably.
Yeah.
I'm legitimately excited for 1 o'clock on Sunday, and that's a little weird for a 1-4 football team. Does this get your juices going a little bit?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I like all the games, as Christian knows, because I think they're all going to be interesting.
Yes, we fought about that on Sunday, I think, right?
Yes, we did.
I was
personally offended to the marrow of my soul, my bones. But I think that, yeah, I'm excited about all of them, but I've never, ever, and you can ask my two neighbors from Neshamet Road in Lakeville, I couldn't believe how excited I was to see Brady start the first game in 2001. And I told the guys who I was neighbors with, who I'm still friends with, I said, he's not going to come out. He's going to be so friggin' good. I don't feel the same way about May. It's just I'd seen more of Brady. But I'm definitely excited. Excited in a way that you would have been having been around the team and Christian having watched the team predates us. But this is 1993. This whole year is 1993 minus the legendary coach on the sidelines and Bill Parcells.
All right, it's time for Tommy Curran's Flex of the Game, presented by Flex Car. Ditch the dealership and save thousands with Flex Car. Flex of the Game, Tommy, what are we going to see?
3rd and 5 or more. What I'm curious to see is how often the Patriots give Drake May opportunities to get in shotgun and go to work. So I want you guys all to flex up on 3rd and 5 or more and watch what Alex Van Pelt has in store for Drake May. If it is training wheels, then we're looking at a situation where he's very reticent to let Drake May go out and try and win the football game and is trying to not lose by a convincing amount. So, to me, a 1-4 team, 3rd and 5 or more, 3rd overall pick, nothing to lose. Don't be throwing tiny little checkdowns and seeing if Jamichael Hasty can make 7 yards to get back to the line of scrimmage, behind the line.
All right.
Check down for it.
There you go. The flex of the game. Unleashing the dragon for Drake May. Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston, thanks so much. We'll talk to you on Sunday at 10, right around 10 o'clock.
All right, guys.
All right, that is Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we return, we'll get back into your Bruins phone calls and Aaron Rodgers. He spoke with the Pat McAfee show, and is just a big liar. I mean, that's really all there is to it.
Big,
we'll get
fat liar.
Some of that as well.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.